everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's final report on What If, when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Well, it's pretty obvious that something is very, very wrong with the Ten Commandments, because they have been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they teach the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions. We've now made them a part of our national psyche. Now, this is a very radical change in our political and moral outlook that has taken place over the past 50 years. Are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. Our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention not only practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, but they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal Constitution. And there's still one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and benefits for the observance of the Ten Commandments. Now, you know every law has a penalty. You don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer its effect. So whether you call that the Mosaic Law, or the Law of God, or Common Law, or Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, it's automatic. And it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happened to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. You can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and then send an email request for that free General Law CD package. Remember, again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. What if, we've been talking about that this week, what if, as my old dad said, the dog hadn't stopped to take a crap, he would have caught the rabbit. Unfortunately, we've already made our decisions in life. You're married to who you're married to. You made a decision, and it's a long-term decision. You went to college and you selected a career. It's a long-term decision. Maybe you made the right decision. Maybe you made the wrong decision. I remember an old buddy of mine who was a lawyer. He was about 50 years old or so, and we were chit-chatting one day over at the Pizza Hut in Kuna, Idaho. It was old Ben who it was, and he said, "I made a career mistake. If I had my life to live over again, I would not have become a lawyer." Well, if he had read Luke chapter 11, he would have seen that Jesus had nothing good to say about a lawyer, a banker, or a preacher. So that ought to tell you right there that as a career choice, you should avoid lawyering and banking and preaching. That would help you a great deal. My old daddy once told me, he said, "You know, experience is the best teacher that you'll ever get." But he added, "It's a god-awful hard way to learn. God-awful hard way to learn." Now, I'm an old man and full of years, and I've made a lot of bad decisions. like old Ben Rice, the older you get, and as you reflect back on the decisions that you made 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, you say, you know, if I had that to do over again, I wouldn't have made that decision. I remember one time our little girl was experimenting, and she had a glass of water, and so she was drinking out of her glass of water, and she'd take a sip or two, and then pretty soon she experimented a little further, and she sat down, and she took a sip or two, and then she reclined a little bit, and she took another sip or two, and pretty soon she laid down, and she took a sip or two, and of course, laying down, trying to drink water, it poured down her neck and all over the front of her, and she jumped up, and she was horrified. She was about 3 or 4 years old at the mess that she'd made, and she looked at me, and she looked at her mother, and she said, well, I won't do that again. Now, fortunately for her, that was a simple lesson in physics. She found out that laying down, drinking water, doesn't work nearly as well as standing or sitting up. It's a decision that she made, and it was a result that she experienced. We do that in life. Remember that first wife you married? Yeah, the first wife. Maybe you've had a second or a third. I remember there was a movie actress by the name of Elizabeth Taylor, Knockout of a Woman. And she'd been married 6 times. I forget now, but 6 or 8 times that she's been married. Now, she's a good-looking woman. Well, if a good-looking woman is married 6 or 8 times, that ought to tell you something. If you've got 6 or 8 failures, you know, you're looking at something over here that's a total failure in life, at least in marriage. I mean, she was probably a good actress, made a lot of money, and probably lived a happy, rewarding, and fulfilling life. But she didn't have what it took in marriage. My old Aunt Bessie did. My Aunt Bessie was married to my Uncle Otto for about, I don't know, 50 years or so. And they didn't get divorced, and they had 4 children, and they seemed to be just as happy as clams at high tide. Now, you wouldn't have thought that my Aunt Bessie, who was not a knockout, you know, with a name like Bessie, you wouldn't expect this girl to be an Elizabeth Taylor. Now, she wasn't as ugly as a mud fence, but you know, she wasn't an Elizabeth Taylor, and evidently my old Uncle Otto didn't notice that there was any deficiencies there. They must have had a pretty good sex life. They had 4 children. They must have got along pretty well together. They were married for 50 years. They didn't get divorced. That tells you something there. My Aunt Bessie didn't have 6 or 8 husbands, and neither did my Uncle Otto. So from my observations, I would say, whatever it was that Uncle Otto and Aunt Bessie were doing in their marriage, they had it together, and Elizabeth Taylor didn't. One day, we were driving down the road, and I looked over at my wife, and I was thinking, you know, I was kind of mulling things over, and I looked over, and I said, now, Jack, you've been married 3 times. And she looked back at me, and she said, yeah. And I said, you had 2 failures. And she looked over at me, and she says, well, you were married once, and you got divorced. Looks like you're just as big a failure as me. And I said, no. No, I'm not as big a failure. You're twice the failure that I am. You see, you married twice, you divorced twice, and now you're married a third time. And you're trying to get it right. Now, Elizabeth Taylor never did get it right. My Aunt Bessie got it right the first time. So I was kind of mulling it over, and I said, well, now, what's the difference between my Aunt Bessie and Elizabeth Taylor? Well, my Aunt Bessie was a Seventh-day Adventist. Now, I'm not advocating that you join the Seventh-day Adventist Church, per se, but I'm just pointing out that my Aunt Bessie was a Seventh-day Adventist. And as a result of that, I would say that because of her adherence to the Sabbath and to certain biblical principles and certain moral codes and conducts and standards, you know, Mormons don't get divorced near as often as the general population. Is there something that those Mormons know about marriage and divorce or family relations that maybe the rest of us could learn from? You know, you take a look at various segments of society. For instance, in China, they have quite a bit of divorce. Or excuse me, have quite a bit of cancer. I'll get off here on the whole health subject here. Quite a bit of cancer. And of the people in China who get cancer, 14% of them are penile cancer. Penile cancer among men. Now, among the Jewish population worldwide, I mean, there's not too many Jews in the world to start with, but if you take the whole group of them, there's about 15 or 20 million around the world. Those people, as a group, have virtually zero, none, zilch, penile cancer. In fact, when a case of penile cancer comes up in a Jew, they print it in the medical literature. They say, oh my God, look at this. Look at this Jew. He got penile cancer. It's virtually unheard of. But among the other populations of the world, it's higher. Among the Chinese, it's the highest. Now, let's take a look at this cause and effect relationship. Jews, primarily, are all circumcised. Chinese, primarily, none of them are. I know. I'm not telling you that you need to go out and get circumcised. I just want to point out that there are certain cause and effect relationships in life. Now, going back to my wife, I said, let me ask you a question, sweetheart. Do you remember when you were getting ready to marry your first husband, Tim? Tim, that was her first husband's name. And she said, yeah, yeah. I said, how old were you? And she said, I was 18. I said, well, how old was he? She said, about 18. I said, did your parents know this guy, Tim? And she said, yeah, of course. He lived across the street. I said, how long had you known this guy, Tim? She said, well, since he was about 10 or 11 years old. So you knew this kid when he was in grammar school? Yeah, yeah. Did your parents know him? Oh, yeah, yeah. In fact, she said, Tim was in my dad's Boy Scout troop. I said, that's amazing. So your mom knew Tim, and you knew Tim, and your dad knew Tim, and your brothers and sisters all knew Tim. Did you talk about marrying Tim to your mom and dad? Yeah, yeah, I mentioned it to them. Well, what was their reaction? What did your mother and father think about you at age 18 marrying this neighborhood kid, the kid who lives across the street, the boy named Tim? And she said, well, my mother and father were dead set against it. I said, then you knew that your parents were opposed to you marrying your childhood sweetheart, Tim, you know, the boy that you went to grammar school with, the boy that lived across the street. He was in your dad's Boy Scout troop. What did you do? Well, we eloped. Since they were opposed to it, we just ran off and got married. I said, how'd that work out? Well, it worked out all right for the first week or two. And then after that, the marriage was all downhill, and by the second child, we ended in divorce. So here you got two little kids. 4 years later, you're divorced. And you look back over this experience, and your parents were opposed to this marriage. Yeah, yeah. I said, that's amazing. Okay, then you married Ed. And she said, yep. I said, did your parents know Ed? Yep, yep. I said, well, how'd they know Ed? Well, he was in my dad's Boy Scout troop. Before you married Ed, did you talk about marrying Ed to your parents? Yep, yeah, I did. And what was their reaction? Oh, they were dead set against it. You mean your parents were opposed to you marrying Ed? Yep, yep, they were dead set opposed to it. So what did you do? I ran off and married him anyway. How'd that one work out? Well, that one lasted a little longer, 17 years. How was it? She said it was just total misery. 17 years of just total, absolute misery. I hated it, every minute of it. But this time, because you had failed the first time, you stuck with this marriage, but it was a mistake too, wasn't it? Yep, it was a mistake. And your parents were opposed to both of these marriages. Yep, yep, they were opposed to both. I said, you know, did it ever occur to you in later life, you know, now my wife is old and full of years also, and she's got gray hair, and I said to her, I said, did it ever occur to you that a young girl, age 18, compared to a parent, age 40, is in a poorer position to make such a vital choice as picking a mate for life. She looked at me, you know, like I was Mork from Mork. She said, where in hell did you get that kind of crazy notion? I said, I got it out of the Bible. I got it out of the Bible. For instance, when Abraham was thinking about marriage for his boy Isaac, Isaac didn't go out and lay Rebecca in the back of a Chevy van and test her out three or four times, you know, to find out whether or not they were sexually compatible. In fact, Isaac didn't have anything to do with picking his wife. Nothing. Zero. The decision was made by his daddy, Abraham, his daddy's servant, and God Almighty. I guess you'd call that a marriage made in heaven. But in any event, it was an arranged marriage. I got to thinking about that a little bit, an arranged marriage. There was another arranged marriage. His grandson, his name was Jacob. He was working for his uncle Laban. He got an eye, you know, for the girls, and he saw this young girl, Rachel, and he said, that's the one I want, and made a deal, and he ended up with both of them. He had two daughters, Leah and Rachel, and so he ended up with two. Wasn't a bad deal. They had a couple of handmaids. He actually ended up with four when it was all said and done. It was a pretty good deal. But anyway, the moral to the story here is that Jacob's marriages were arranged. Arranged. It was parental in nature. It was a deal that was made by the parents as opposed to being made by the parties. Now, today in America, if you were to suggest that parents should be involved in the marriage selection over there, I mean, the average girl, you know, going to college today, kind of snoot and hoot and holler and look at you like you were stupid, you know. I just thought I'd point that out. The divorce rate in the United States in 1900 was 8 per 100,000. Did you get that? 8 divorces for every 100,000 marriages. Today, there are 67 divorces for every 100 marriages. I don't know how you figure 8 out of 100,000. I'll just do it here, you know, 8 and divide that by 100,000. 100,000 equals 0.00080. I don't know what the hell that is. I guess that's 8 per something or other. 0000, that's 4 zeros, 8, is the percentage. Now it's 67%. From less than 1% to 67% in 100 years is quite a transition. Now I got to looking at this and said, geez, you know, 100 years ago, parents were involved in marriage and the picking of mates, wives, and husbands for their children. You look in the Bible, and a guy by the name of Samson. Remember old Samson? Samson, you know, the guy with the long hair? The hippie guy. Anyway, he was a strong man, and he had it in his mind that he wanted to get married, and so he saw this neat little filly over in Philistine, and he said to his daddy, "Hey, Dad, why don't you go down here and get this Philistine woman for me?" It was kind of a selection. It was kind of parental advice involved here. He didn't run off and elope, you know, like Tim and Jack did. But the moral to the story was he wanted this Philistine girl, and so his daddy said, "Aren't there any women in Israel that you have to go over here to Philistine or Philistines to get a wife?" His daddy was dead set against it, and he told his kid so. He said, that girl over there, she's not for you. And Samson said, nevertheless, I'm going to have that Philistine woman go down there and get her for her. So, you know, his dad said, okay, son, if that's what you want, I'll go down there and get her for you. But he went down there and brokered the deal, you know. Came back, but that marriage didn't end up very good. He didn't learn from that one, so he got chasing after this other Philistine woman over here, and she got him killed. You know, in the final analysis, you know, he ended up dead, digging around here with this miscegenation. But anyway, that's another story for another day. Anyway, here's the moral of the story. He made a couple of bad decisions. Well, Samson did. Isaac didn't make a bad decision in picking his wife. And he and his wife, Rachel, was it Rachel? Yeah, I think it was. Anyway, they lived for, No, it was Rebecca. Rebecca. This is Isaac and Rebecca. He lived with her all of his life. He just had one wife. Just kind of like my Uncle Otto and Aunt Bessie. They seemed to get on pretty well together. And, oh, I forgot to tell you. Yeah, my Uncle Otto and Aunt Bessie were selected as mates by their parents. It's just, I know, it was kind of a crazy old archaic custom that people used to get involved in. But, you know, you used to go, you know, if you're a young man, you wanted to marry this girl, you would go to her father and say, you know, I kind of have it in my mind to marry your daughter over here. What do you think of that? You'd at least get parental approval, you know, if not parental advice as to who you ought to marry. And I think that looking back on it, you know, just I know it's abhorrent and it's obnoxious just thinking about it, you know, because we here in the Western world today, the land of free sex and sodomy, sex and sodomy, we kind of look upon that as being kind of quaint and arcane, and that's kind of dumb. But I just wanted to point out, if you're looking for a mate, and you're around, 16, 18, 20, 22, 24, something less than 30, the age of good sense, and you're thinking about marriage, you might want to consult mom and dad, because they've already lived through that. They might have already been married and divorced a time or two, and they might be in a better position to pick a wife or a husband for you at age 40 than you will be at age 18, 20, or 22. I just thought I'd throw that out there for a little of your consideration. And the divorce rates kind of bear that out. You know, you take a look at the old custom of parental consent in marriage, and the divorce rate is less than 1%, and you take a look at no parental supervision in marriage and divorce rates at 67%, and is there any kind of a correlation there? So parents picking your mates and taking a look at the divorce rate, we got to ask, gee, what if mom and dad had been involved in my first or second marriage? Now, I told you about the cancer rate among the Chinese versus the Jews in this thing called circumcision. You know, you got to ask the question, gee, what if all the Chinese people were circumcised? I mean, it's not that, you know, all you Chinese people out there are going to run out and get circumcised, but I just wanted to point out that there are certain basic principles in life. You know, whether we like it or not, that's just the way life is. And life is filled with these choices, these decisions that have to be made. Decisions like, what college should I go to, or should I go to college? I guess that's the first place to start. Should I go to college and get perverted in the first place? You know, if you stayed out of college, you wouldn't have to worry about unlearning all the crap that you're going to learn when you get there. And then when you make that decision, you're going to have to live with that decision for the rest of your life. And then when you get to be 70 years old, are you going to look back and say, my God, what if I had married that other girl? What if I'd listened to mom and dad? What if I hadn't become a lawyer? What if I'd have become a doctor instead? You know, has anybody ever thought about asking? Now, I'm not suggesting that you become a Jew. I'm just suggesting that you consider the consequences of circumcision. Now, if you don't want penile cancer, and I just gave you the statistics here, I said there are virtually, for practical purposes, all Jews are circumcised, and there's no penile cancer among Jewish men. Penile cancer among Jewish women is unheard of also. But penile cancer among Chinese men is very common. In fact, it represents 14% of the cancers among the Chinese. When a Chinaman gets cancer, he's 14% of the time going to have it in penile form. So I just thought I'd point that out. Now, do you think that maybe, you know, you could be a black man, and do you think maybe circumcision might be for you? You know, it's a decision you've got to make. Is circumcision in the cards for your children? I just wanted to point out that in the Bible, everybody's circumcised. Circumcision comes from God. It was first instituted between God and a guy by the name of Abraham, who was instructed to circumcise all of his children, and so on down the line, the family grew to be pretty good size. And so today, you find among Anglo-Saxons, circumcision is pretty common. not universal, but pretty common. And as a result of that, we find that penile cancer among circumcised men is very, very rare. Not unheard of, but just very, very rare. Thought I'd throw that out for your consideration, just in case you were concerned. But it points out, later on, when you come down with penile cancer, and you say, my God, what if I had been circumcised? What if? Education. We were talking about education here a couple of programs ago. In fact, I think it was yesterday. And I pointed out that in education, you, if you were to educate your child at home, in a homeschooling program, even if you're a crummy truck driver, just dumb as a box of rocks, and you don't know that Rhode Island is the smallest state in the union, but you couldn't teach your kid, could you? That's why you send him to public school. That's the most common reason for people sending their children to public school, is because they say, I'm incompetent. I couldn't do it. I'm too damn dumb. So they send their kid to public school. Now, in nationwide surveys, about 2 million people now today, maybe it's more than that, I don't know, the last numbers I saw around 2 million or more, people in America are educating their children in public school. What percentage is that? 2 out of 50? Take 2 and divide it by 50, and what do we get? 4%. There's about 50 million kids in America that are being educated, you know, round numbers, probably a little over that, and 4% of them are being educated at home. The 4% that are being educated at home, 4% being educated at home, when they're tested, score at the 86th percentile, which is a standard by which these academians measure your smarts. Want to see how smart you are? They give you this test, and they say, well, this kid scores at the 86th percentile. If you send him to the local Catholic school, he won't be quite as smart, but he'll be pretty smart. He'll score at the 80th percentile, about 6 percentiles less. Now, I'm assured that that's not 6%, but percentile, whatever the hell percentile means. I don't know either. I'm just telling you that it seems like 86 is better than 80. Now, if you send them to public school, on average, nationwide, they'll score at the 50th percentile, unless you're sending them to a public city school like New York, Chicago, or Los Angeles, where they'll score 28. That's quite a variation. You know, it goes all the way from 28 to 86, and there's some differences in price, too. Differences in price. And the difference is, the public school system, it costs $10,000 a year to educate a kid to the 50th percentile on average, 28th percentile if he's in an inner-city public school. And by the way, if he's in an inner-city public school, it costs $19,000 to educate him. It's not entirely clear to me why it costs twice as much to educate a kid to be half as smart. But that's the way it is. And these numbers, by the way, come right out of the United States Department of Education. And if you can't believe your government, who can you believe? Huh? Think about it. Now, it costs $546 last time I looked. I'll round it off to $600. It costs $600 to educate a kid in a home school. $2,500 to educate a kid in the local Catholic school. $10,000 to educate your kid in the local free public school. I just remember the word free public school. It's the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. Free public education for all children in public school. Well, this made me wonder, who the hell pays, who is this great guru who's given out all this money? It's $500 billion a year to educate all these kids in public schools. Somebody said it was taxpayers. Are you one of those, a taxpayer? Well, if you're a taxpayer, then I guess the 10th plank doesn't apply to you. That isn't exactly free public education. So I thought I'd throw that out for your consideration. But anyway, it costs 16 times more to educate a kid in public school, 32 times more if you really want a dumb one. If you really want a dumb kid, you got to spend 32 times more than you'd spend on him if you educated that same kid at home. And here's the kicker. Of these 4% of the children who are being educated in homeschool, most of them, over half, most of them, over half, are being educated by parents who do not have a college education and who do not have a teaching credential. Most. Over half. Every kid in public school, without an exception, every kid in public school, with no exceptions, is being educated by a college-trained teacher. Somebody that's got letters after his name and who has a teaching credential. Every single one of them. Which costs 32 times more to educate in Los Angeles, and he comes out 16 times dumber. Was it 16 times dumber? No, it's not quite. Let me do this one again. 86 divided by 28. Oh, he only comes out 3 times dumber. It costs 32 times more money to get a kid who's 3 times dumber than a kid that's educated at home. So when you go to make this choice, and your kid ends up to be kind of marginal, you know, his intelligence, his brains, his knowledge, he's not the sharpest marble in the drawer. Remember that you paid good hard-earned money to turn out a kid like that. I mean, it don't happen accidentally. If you left that kid alone and you did not send him to public school, he'd come out smarter. You know that? He'd come out smarter accidentally, and we send them to public school. That's because we want them to turn out dummies. It's the best place to do it. And let me give you a reminder here while we're talking about what if. What if I gave you this reminder and reminded you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, here at the Law School, we teach family law. That's how to get divorced and come out of it with your pants on. Tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure. Business law. That's how to make money in business. Agricultural law. That's how to make money in farming, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. That means we don't make any money, and we're not involved in commerce, and we don't discriminate against people because of their skin color. That's nice. And we're open to individuals, but by prearrangement. That means we're not open to the public, and you have to knock on our door and ask to come in. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact discs, so if you don't want to come to school, you can get it through the mail. If you'd like more information on the homeschooling program, why don't you go to our webpage that's on the computer, and the source is called georgegordon.org. So you go to georgegordon.org and you can get more information off the web. The Law Hour website is updated every week, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. Archives, that means that you can listen to this program over and over and over again, and you can even download it and copy it and spread it around and give it to your friends and neighbors and do all kinds of good things like that, and it's free of charge. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. That means that people in South Korea can listen to it, too. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service, and we're brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. We talk about it all right here, 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package if you'd like to order one. Just call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And the reason you have to write to us and ask or call us and ask for it is because we don't want to tell you what you don't want to hear. So if you want to hear it, call and ask. And if you don't want to hear it, let it lay. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. However, these endorsements are recommendations that we give don't necessarily mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. They may not like us and not want to be associated with us in any way, shape, form, or manner. And that's because that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, or they're religious, or economic, or sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans. And we want to inform you that their viewpoint is not necessarily 100% endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Just some of it. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. But they should. And for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. We have to give you that reminder every day, otherwise people would think that all these radio stations approve of all of this information that you hear on this program, and they don't. A lot of these people, they write me letters and they say, "You crazy lunatic nut." I get letters like that once in a while. About this alternative minimum tax, I talked to you about that here the other day. What if? You know, we're always talking about this thing of what if. What if Americans were to tithe instead of paying the income tax? Or what if Americans stayed out of commerce? I know it's crazy. You went to college and you learned commerce. You learned how to get a job over here at General Motors and how to fill out your tax return and get a social security number. And people complain a lot. They write here to the law school. They call here. They send emails and faxes. And they just jump up and down, paw the ground, bite the bushes, and rant and rave about how bad the income tax is and social security and the government regulations and OSHA, the EPA. I mean, people call here and they say, "I'm from the People's Republic of California. I'm from the People's Republic of Texas." I mean, people aren't happy. Well, at least the people that call here, they're not very happy at all. And they're unhappy about the income tax, and they're unhappy about Social Security. And I can't help but say, well, no, what if these people had, instead of, when they got to that fork in the road, you know, the commercial fork in the road, here was private property and private enterprise to the right, and here was public property, and from each according to his ability and to each according to his needs to the left. What if people were to come to that fork in the road and choose the other fork? Private property. No Social Security. Pay your tithes. Don't have income. Don't participate in income. Avoid income. You know, I talk to people, I say, well, are you looking for a dose of CLAP or AIDS or VD? Would you like to buy a cup full of venereal disease? You know, people look at me like, my God, you must be out of your mind. No, I don't. Get away from me. Oh, never could quite figure that out. These are the same people, you know, that practice adultery, free sex. But when you get right down to payday, they don't want to collect the check. You ever notice that? Yeah, I want to go down to Flo's Whorehouse, but I don't want to get a dose of crabs or clap. Well, you know, that's the way life is. Life is filled with choices. You want a little fun and frolic on Friday night down at the Ritz, you know, over at the Blue Room. You know, there's some risks involved. Out on the road, you know, they call them lot lizards, and they come out there to your truck, you know, and they're knocking on the door trying to peddle their wares, you know, and most of us guys that are out on the road, you know, we get a little cautious, you know. Sometimes your caution gets thrown to the wind, but, you know, most of the time we're a little bit cautious about who these girls are and who they've been sleeping with, you know. Just exercising a little common sense. Anyway, moral to the story is that decisions have to be made, and when these decisions are made, oftentimes these decisions have lifelong repercussions. And we look back and we say, my God, what if I had taken that other fork in the road? Instead of a career with ExxonMobil, what if I had become an entrepreneur? instead of getting a Social Security number, what if I had supported myself and practiced strict liability instead of limited liability? Not very many people are able to make that distinction, but the Amish people are. Amish. Now, these Amish people are kind of crazy. If you just look at them and see, they're kind of crazy. They dress funny. And if you take a look at the way they travel, boy, you talk about funny, you know, watching this guy clip-clop down the street, you know, when on his horse or being pulled, you know, in a buggy. But here's what I noticed about these Amish guys. You know, there's a farm foreclosure. And all of these farmers over here that are being foreclosed on, they go up for public auction. And the auctioneer, he's standing up there, and he's going through, beep, 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 sold! You know, well, I was at an auction not too long ago, and I saw this farm being sold, and this Amish guy bought it. I'm this crazy lunatic Amish guy over here with the funny clothes and his horse, you know, tied up over here at the hitching post, bought this farm. Well, you know, somebody had to buy it. But this Amish guy goes over and he opens up an attaché case and pays $475,000 for this farm in $100 bills. I thought, my God, this guy must be peddling some damn good crack to come up with that kind of money. In fact, these Amish guys are the only people in America that I know can go to a farm auction, open an attaché case, and pay for that thing in $100 bills. They haven't learned about just weights and balances and gold and silver coin yet. But, hey, listen, you got to hand it to them, you know. Somehow or another, they can rub two nickels together. And they're pretty good carpenters, too. Pretty good carpenters. You ever stop to think about what if? And I'm not advocating that you become a Seventh-day Adventist so that you don't get divorced like my Aunt Bessie, or that you join the Amish church because you want to buy a farm. I'm just saying that, you know, these people make decisions, too. And I don't know what this Amish guy did when he made his decision that he could come up with $400,000, nearly $500,000, and buy this farm, pay cash. I guess he doesn't do business with the banks. He didn't have a cashier's check. Well, bad decisions have a cause and effect relationship, and we see that in Romans 8, verse 7. If you take a look in the Bible, in Romans is a letter that Paul wrote to a bunch of people, and he said, the carnal mind is enmity against God. It isn't subject to the law of God, and neither indeed can be. You ever notice that? People have a hostility toward God. They don't like Him at all. I'm not quite sure why. You've got to ask, well, what did God ever do to you that made you hate Him so much? You know, I had a daddy one time. He grabbed me and he threw me up against the wall. My daddy was kind of handy that way. I'd misbehave or do something that he thought was misbehavior. I didn't necessarily think it was too misbehaving, but he thought that it was kind of misbehaving, and he always figured that his viewpoint superseded mine. That's why I wanted to run away from home when I was 11 years old, because my daddy was a tyrant. Anyway, my daddy had this crazy habit. He'd grab me, and he'd throw me up against the wall. When you take a kid about 11 years old, and you grab him and you throw him with sufficient velocity that he hits the wall, which doesn't move. If the wall doesn't move, then the kid has to bounce off of it. And it's just, and you test it. Try it. I know, it's kind of wild, but this 11-year-old kid, he gets lippy with you. Like I used to get with my daddy, sometimes I get a little lippy. And my daddy grabbed me, he'd throw me into the wall, and then I'd bounce off the wall. Well, when you bounce off that wall with sufficient velocity, you lose your balance. Test it. Take an 11-year-old, throw him up against the wall, he bounces off the wall, he loses his balance, he falls on the floor. Gives you time to whip off your belt. And my old daddy'd whip off his belt, and he'd go to work on me. He didn't do that very often. I was a pretty bright kid. And I was a very intelligent kid. I could learn damn fast. My daddy was a good teacher, and he didn't put up with a hell of a lot of crap either. He was an old Army guy from World War II, you know, as Archie Bunker used to say, WW2. That was my daddy. Came from WW2. And he had these crazy customs. And I didn't follow all these crazy customs, and I was kind of like this scripture in the Bible, you know. I was not subject to the law of my daddy. He noticed that, and he got real offended at it. When I wasn't subject to my daddy's law, you know, he'd say, mow the grass, take out the garbage, make your bed, wash the dishes, feed the dog. He had these crazy rules, you know, like change your underwear. Put your dirty clothes in the dirty clothes hamper, you know. Yeah, all these crazy laws, I thought they were stupid. 11-year-olds, when they look at mom and dad's laws, they can see how stupid mom and dad are right away. And so we're not much different today. We can look in the Bible and we can see how stupid God is. It doesn't take us very long to figure that out. And so God came up with a sentence there, or a paragraph. He says, you know, the carnal mind, the normal, natural, everyday, garden variety, Joe Sixpack, running that Walmart truck up and down the freeway, is enmity against God. You don't like that, and it kind of ticks you off. And so you're not subject to the law of God. And in fact, he went a step further. He says, well, hell, that's normal. You can't be. That's why you have a fuzzbuster in a cab of your truck. You want to know, you know, in advance where that radar gun is, you know, up the road. That's because you're not subject to the speed laws. And so you want to evade and avoid that. And so it's kind of natural. Human beings don't like somebody else telling them what to do, unless, of course, you join the army. Now, there's a certain group of people that need to be told when to get up in the morning, when to go to bed at night, and what to do in between. Those are government workers. And then there's some of us over here that follow Romans 8, verse 7. We're not subject to the law of God or man or anybody else. We're a bunch of rebels. And we just don't like that. Now, as a result of that, we tend to make a lot of bad decisions. That's because we don't listen very well to advice that comes from superiors, you know, like moms and dads and gods and things like that. So God comes along and he gives us 10 commandments and he says, thou shalt not commit adultery. Now, you know, if you're like I am, you know that that's a dumb law because all the fun is over at Flo's, and after all, that's the desirable place to be. Fortunately, depending upon how you look at it, fortunately, old dad comes along and says, well, that's right, son. That's right. There's all this fun and all this pleasure over at Flo's. But there's also all of this death, sickness, and heartache over there. Or I guess all this heartache, sickness, and then death over at Flo's. You know, it's a risk that you run. When you're 19, you've got eternal life. When you get to be 70, you're out of time. I'm pushing 70, so I'm running out of time. You know, when I was 19 years old, I was flying airplanes under bridges and under power lines. And that's when I had eternal life. When I got to be about 30, I woke up one day and I said, you know, I might not have as much eternal life as I used to have. And I started flying over the power lines and over the bridges. Then I got to be about 50 and I could see that I had a whole lot less eternal life than I had before. So I stopped flying airplanes altogether, realizing that the family that flies together dies together. See, the older you get, the wiser you get. Because after a couple of your buddies, you know, bought the farm, as they say, you know, in flying circles, bought the farm. I remember old Chris Miller, he's a good old buddy of mine. He was flying a Cherokee 6 one night in bad weather, and he bought the farm up around Martinez, California. You know, it kind of makes indelible impressions on your mind, you know, when your buddies kill themselves flying into the side of a hill, you know, and wake up one day and say, God, that could have been me. It wasn't, but it could have been. And so as time progresses along, boys and girls, the older you get, the smarter you get. Well, I don't know if you get any smarter, but you get a lot wiser. I don't know if wisdom and smarts are all necessarily tied up in the same package, but you get a little bit more experience. And so, as I was mentioning to you, you know, if I had this to do over again, I think I'd go to my daddy and say, Dad, I'm thinking about marrying this girl over here. Why don't you give me a couple of pointers on picking out a wife? Since how you're about 50 years old and I'm about 20, and maybe you've had a couple of experiences in life picking women, And maybe you could help me pick a good one. You know, if I had that to do over again, I think I'd consider that. I didn't when I was 23. I didn't do that. And, of course, I married this girl, and I thought she's a great thing, great girl. She was, you know, she's a great girl. But not for the long haul. There was things that came up that maybe my daddy could have foreseen, you know, knowing girls a little better than I did at age 20. And he might have been able to advise me a little more. And that's where I point out to my students over, I said, you know, it just could be that this fellow that we call God, that, you know, the guy that says, I'm without beginning and without end, the guy that says, I've got eternal life, I've been around forever, and I'm going to be around forever to come. Did it ever occur to you that he might be a little bit smarter than we are? I know that this is a bitter pill to swallow, but I just thought I'd throw that out there. Has it ever occurred to you that maybe this guy might know something you don't? So when he says that you ought to be circumcised, do you suppose that maybe he knows something? Maybe he's been watching these Jews and watching these Chinese people, you know, for a lot longer than you and I have. Maybe he's been thinking about that, and he wrote up this little section in the Bible about circumcision. He says, okay, now here's what I want you to do. I want you to all go out and get circumcised. I'm circumcised. My boys are all circumcised. But every once in a while, some guy comes here, and he says he's not circumcised. And I kind of raise an eyebrow. I raise the left eyebrow first. And that indicates surprise. When you see me raise my right eyebrow, that indicates concern, and my left eyebrow is surprise. So when you see my eyebrows dancing around on my face, you can say, that guy Gordon is either surprised or he's concerned. And so I look at that and I say, this is a guy that does not practice circumcision. He doesn't practice the law of God. There's one law here. This guy doesn't practice. And then I always wonder, wonder if this guy's going to die from penile cancer. Then some other guy comes in here and he's educated in public school, and I wonder, I wonder if this guy knows that Texas and Alaska are the two biggest states in the Union, and that Delaware and Rhode Island are the smallest. I wonder how smart this guy is, because when somebody tells me he came from public school, I came from public school, and I'm pretty damn dumb. And I say to myself, you know, if that guy came from public school, he's probably just about as dumb as I am. Once in a while, not often, but once in a while, some guy comes in here and he says, I was educated in private school. And right away, I know this guy's smarter than I am. He came from private school. And then once in a great, 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 great while, only 4% of the time, some guy says, well, I was homeschooled. And I go, oh, my God, this guy's a genius. This guy's a walking encyclopedia. This guy I know is smarter than I am. And they usually always are. You don't have to be too smart to be smarter than I am. So I came along and I came to the conclusion that God gave us a couple of commandments. You know, he said the Ten Commandments. Ten Commandments, he gave us Ten Commandments. Our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention gave us Ten Amendments, and Karl Marx gave us the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. So I look around, and what do we practice in this country? We practice the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. Yeah, Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, and then we call California the People's Republic of California. What the hell do you expect it to be? If you're a practicing communist, wouldn't you expect it to be the People's Republic of Florida? The People's Republic of North Dakota? Wouldn't you expect to get the same results in California, Washington, and Oregon that you get in China, Poland, and Russia? Practicing communism? You know, I don't think you have to be a mental giant to figure that out. And so I always got to ask the question, well, what if you stopped practicing communism out there, boys and girls? Has it ever occurred to you people that if you're complaining about the income tax, has it ever occurred to you, what if you stopped having income? Would that solve your problem? Would it do something better for you? Would it change your circumstances in any way? I know people are complaining they don't have enough money. That's a big complaint. A lot of students, they say, I just don't know how to make ends meet. I don't have enough money. Has it occurred to you that maybe you ought to make some more? Instead of dealing in currency, Federal Reserve notes, checks, and credit cards, and debt, has it ever occurred to you to deal in money? I mean, real money. I mean, the real McCoy, gold and silver coin. Did you know that gold is the currency of kings? Gold, coin, it's the currency of kings. Silver is the currency of gentlemen. Barter is the currency of peasants. And debt is the currency of slaves. Well, what do you deal in? I deal in gold. I'm not complaining. I'm as happy as a clam at high tide. I deal in silver, and I'm not complaining. And I'm as happy as a clam at high tide. Hell, I even deal in barter once in a while. I avoid debt like AIDS, herpes, and VD. I'm not in debt. I used to be. I have practiced with the currency of slaves. I tested the currency of slaves. I tested debt and financial statements and balance sheets, Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, and it didn't work well for me. I was totally unhappy with credit cards, checks, and debt. So one day I woke up and I said, I wonder what would happen if I started dealing in more gold and more silver and more barter. And sure enough, I got happier and happier as life went on. And I find that happiness comes from rubbing two gold coins together, not in rubbing two financial statements together. So I just thought I'd throw that out there for your consideration. My old daddy used to say to me, did you learn anything from that? One time I said, no, I didn't. So he bounced me off the wall and then worked me over real good. And he said, did you learn anything from that? Being a very wise and intelligent child, I said, yeah, Dad, yes, yes, I learned. I know. I was raised in the era before child abuse. We didn't know what the hell that was. But I learned. And when my daddy wanted to teach me a lesson, you know, I could learn real fast. I was a very, very precocious child, especially at the end of his belt. I was very precocious. I think if there were more belts, there'd be more precocious children. I think if there was more discipline, there'd be smarter kids. It's kind of my observation. From an old man, that's an observation. So when we ask the question, what if, if the dog hadn't stopped to take a crap, he would have caught the rabbit. If you apply what if to the future instead of to the past, I think you can probably do a lot better in the future. Life will be a lot better for you. If you'll take a look at the Ten Commandments and obey God and keep His Ten Commandments, I think that would be a better piece of advice than listening to Karl Marx and George Bush and the Republicans and Democrats who are trying to get you to practice and have sold you the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. What if we practiced the Ten Commandments instead of the Ten Planks? All right, boys and girls, we're out of time. We've got to leave it right there. Let me give you a reminder that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. I'll tell you more. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, you can go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening and good night, friends.